Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for June 5th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks, and we've reached the conclusion of WWE's premium live event for this month titled Hell in a Cell. And that's the show we'll be talking about here tonight, as well as last night's NXT In Your House pay-per-view. So if you want to jump on the phone lines and give us your thoughts on either one of those shows, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. Otherwise, you can email us. I know it's late for some of us, wnialivecast@gmail.com, and I'll get to all of your emails here tonight. So, as usual, before we go to the phone calls, I just want to run down the card so that we're all on the same page here. And it also allows some listeners to jump on here as we get things started so they don't miss anything. We'll start with last night's In Your House. It started with Tony D'Angelo, Channing Stacks Lorenzo, and Troy Two Dimes Donovan defeating Legado del Fantasma. And this has been the turf warfare in NXT 2.0 that's been going on for some time. Here, the stipulation was that the losing team would have to join the winning team's stable. So Legado del Fantasma now has to join Tony D'Angelo's group, which seems silly. If you're Tony D'Angelo, why would you want to have your opposing group be a part of yours, trying to infiltrate you and bring you down from the inside, probably? I don't know. I'm sure there's some power psychologically that D'Angelo would have by having Legado under his thumb, but it never really works out the way it's intended. So that was the opening six-man tag match at In Your House. It was a good match. Nothing blow away, but a good opener. Match number two was Toxic Attraction defeating Katana Chance and Kayden Carter to retain the NXT Women's Tag Titles. A decent enough match here. You have four women who, you know, are not the strongest from an in-ring point of view, but I thought they gelled okay in this one. And Toxic Attraction still coming out on top here, as well as with Mandy Rose later on in the show. So this is not the time that NXT is moving away from them, certainly. The third match was Carmelo Hayes defeating Cameron Grimes to win the NXT North American Championship. This was one of two titles, that would change hands on this evening. As good a match as you'd expect, just sort of on a different level than many of the other matches on this card, just from a smoothness point of view, from the point of view of just being solid and well-worked, and you know, that's the athleticism obviously was there as well with these two. So just a really good contest there. Mandy Rose defeating Wendy Chu in the NXT Women's Championship match. So, you know, Toxic Attraction, I mentioned retaining all the titles here on this show. This did not have the feel of their titles necessarily being in jeopardy going into this one. So it's not all that big of a surprise that they walked away still as champions in this one. Wendy Chu upgraded her pajamas to what looked like a tracksuit here for this one, probably maybe a little more comfortable, I don't know. But Mandy Rose gets the victory. Crowd was behind Chu pretty good there. The Creeds defeating Pretty Deadly for the NXT tag titles. I know that there's speculation with Max Dupree and on SmackDown next week, him supposedly introducing his first client or clients that Pretty Deadly could get the call up and be his clients there. But the Creeds, the stipulation here was if they had lost, they would be kicked out of Diamond Mine, but instead they win. And a really good pop for the victory, too. So NXT seems to have something with the Creeds, at least in front of this small audience that they're running in front of in NXT. We'll see if they're able to continue with that and to capitalize on that. Good match there. The main event was Bron Breakker defeating Joe Gacy to win the NXT title. Gacy's a guy who, and this is another match where it never felt really like the title was terribly in jeopardy. You know, to me, Joe Gacy, they sort of lost the plot with Joe Gacy, who started as this, you know, woke, I guess, left-wing type of person, or at least somebody in creative's vision of what someone on the left is. And gradually it's become this person who walks around with druids and is sort of like magic. And so I don't know if that's supposed to be an extension of this woke character or if they've just gone in a completely different direction with it. But the transition was, you know, from one to the next doesn't make a lot of sense. But Breaker gets the victory here over Joe Gacy in the main event. Tonight, at Hell in a Cell, we started the show with Bianca Belair defeating Asuka and Becky Lynch to retain the Raw Women's Championship in a triple threat match. Becky hits her finisher on Asuka, goes for the pin. Bianca throws her off and pins Asuka. So, yes, this is the finish that WWE does historically in most of their triple threat matches. A little bit of a twist here because it's the babyface stealing the pin in Bianca Belair. But I thought that was very clever because now it sends Becky Lynch further off the deep end. You know, she's been portrayed as unstable since losing the title, and certainly having the title in her grasp only from Bianca to steal it out from under her in this way, I think we'll continue on with that. And I think most people suspected that this match, or at least the finish, would play into an eventual rematch between Becky Lynch and Bianca Belair. A lot of people thought Asuka was here just to sort of take the pin so that Belair and Lynch would be free to have another match down the line, and that's what I think we come out of this match having. This was a really good opener. A lot of energy in this one. The women were all very good in the ring, and it was just a lot of fun. They really brought it. This energy that Asuka brings has been missed. Bobby Lashley, in a 2-on-1 handicap match, defeats MVP and Omos. Not a lot to this one, but, you know, Lashley gets the victory over MVP here. So the booking sort of similar to match number one, where you have Bianca Belair getting the victory over Asuka to eventually face the other opponent in this match, Becky Lynch. That's kind of what it feels like here. Lashley gets the win over MVP to eventually build a yet another match with Omos. Match number three was Kevin Owens defeating Ezekiel. This may have been one of the weaker points of the show. You know, Kevin Owens is a master of keeping the crowd engaged. And even a match like this where, you know, Ezekiel has his moments, but in terms of bell to bell, I don't think there's a lot of excitement about this character. So Owens was able to jaw with the fans and kind of keep them interested and keep them vocal in the match. I'm not really sure what the payoff for Ezekiel is going to be. It does seem like a one-note character, so we'll see if creative has anything further in mind for him. Match number four was the Judgment Day, Edge, Damian Priest, and Rhea Ripley defeating Liv Morgan, Finn Balor, and AJ Styles. So the Judgment Day gets a big victory, a feather in their cap here as they continue their reign of terror on Monday Night Raw. I thought this was a really good match. I thought Ripley and Morgan looked good in there against each other as well. And, so we'll see if the Judgment Day continues to add in the coming weeks to its stable. Match number five was the lone SmackDown contribution to Hell in a Cell. It was Madcap Moss defeating Happy Corbin. Moss taking the stairs to Corbin's throat with the chair in them, sort of like what Corbin did to Moss. So this would appear to write Happy Corbin off TV for a little while. WWE did well to change up the outfit of Madcap Moss recently, and hopefully the next step is the name now that he is presumably done with Happy Corbin. I think there's a lot of potential with Moss, but they have to get him away from Corbin for sure. Match number six, Austin Theory defeating Mustafa Ali to retain the United States Championship. Ali losing in his hometown of Chicago, despite having the crowd viscerally behind him throughout the entire match, was a disappointment, and yet it was so WWE, you know. And I think Austin Theory is the heel that they want to get that heat of beating Ali in his hometown, so it did not surprise me that Austin Theory gets the victory here. But, you know, unfortunately, it continues a staggering tradition by WWE to beat babyfaces in their hometowns. And match number seven was Cody Rhodes defeating Seth Rollins in Hell in a Cell. But the real story here was Cody Rhodes coming into this match with a pectoral injury and just absolutely gruesome to see once he took off his robe. His entire pectoral region down the left arm was just completely purple, right arm, I think, rather. unfathomable that he could wrestle the kind of match that he wrestled here, which was not what we've seen from Cody and Seth before, but it was more story-based. That's not to say that there was not copious amounts of physicality, which there was. Hell, that the Hell in a Cell structure did not come into play as much, but certainly the drama surrounding Cody's injury and Seth trying to work on it, Cody trying to overcome it, was really the main crux of this match. And Cody getting the victory here, that makes him 3-0 against Seth Rollins. I think no one would fault WWE if they had gone with Seth Rollins here, Cody being on the shelf for a while to get this this injury repaired. Seth would be the one on TV going forward, and it would give Cody an out to suffer his first injury, loss back in WWE, this major injury. I don't think anyone would think less of him for losing under the circumstances. But on the other hand, WWE is in desperate need of top babyfaces. And so having Cody overcome this injury to beat Seth Rollins, I can't argue with that either. I think I would have been fine with the result either way. So that is Hell in a Cell. I would say a slight thumbs up, even though, you know, card-wise, it was not a strong card. You had another month where the WWE or Universal Championships were not defended, and that could be happening more often as long as those titles stay around the proverbial waist of Roman Reigns. So, again, if you want to join in a conversation, 515-605-9345, email us wnialivecast@gmail.com for those tuning in. After the start here, I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks, and we are here each and every Sunday night with Wrestling Night in America on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Talking the big shows in pro wrestling. Usually I have a co-host as part of the Torch family who joins me to either break down some major shows or preview them. So we'll be back on that schedule, 8 p.m. Eastern next week, next Sunday. Now, speaking of members of the Torch family, I'm riding solo here tonight, but we do have PW Torch assistant editor Zach Haydorn, who was at the show live, and he's calling in as our live correspondent tonight. Zach, thanks so much for offering to be the live correspondent tonight, and good to talk to you on this evening.
Yeah, good to talk to you too, Greg. Thanks for having me, and lots to talk about too. On another, you know, and going in, I wasn't sure how much there would be, and so, but I think there's a lot coming out of this.
Yeah, and I think it sort of begins with Cody Rhodes and the injury that cropped up this weekend. That he suffered, the pectoral injury, and the will he or won't he in terms of will this match take place. And even once the show began, WWE was sort of vague about whether or not he would be wrestling. It was sort of, well, Cody's got this injury. Let's find out what happens tonight. And so, you know, as viewers at home, we weren't really sure what that meant. We weren't sure if that was going to lead to an angle to sort of get them out of the match or if it was going to be a short match or whatever, but Cody wrestled a regular match, and I don't think anyone has ever accused Cody of not being tough, but Zach, this is a whole different level of tough.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, it really was, and it's, you know, you never want somebody to have to go through that. You don't wish injury on anybody, but that created so much drama for the match, you know, and especially like when he took off the jacket and you saw, you know, the bruise on his right, you know, pec and down his arm. I mean, that really resonated with the live audience. Like, I don't want to say it was like an audible like gasp or anything like that, but like you could tell everybody was humming to the people they were with about, wow, just look at that. How is that going to work? How is he going to do this? So that layered in like a really strong level of drama and intrigue as to, you know, how he was going to get through it. And that, you know, the injury was the talk of like the concourse area in the building for sure. You know, people wondering, hey, is the match going to happen at all? Seth's going to win. Like, you know, across the board, those were kind of the conversations that were happening. And I think it actually, like, it set up kind of like a tamer crowd to start the show because, you could sense that people felt that their main event was maybe hung in the balance a little bit. So it took a bit to get going, but that triple threat really helped kind of bring everybody back.
And I know you were there live, and I certainly want to get to your live thoughts and live impressions of the show. But one more thing about the Cody situation as it played out.
Yeah.
Given that injury, do you think WWE Medical should have stepped in and said, no, this is too much? I mean, because my timeline on Twitter is sort of torn. Yes, they're giving Cody a lot of credit for gutting this one out and the performance that he put on here tonight, but there's also kind of the feeling that should he have even been out there? You know, if Cody wasn't going to stop himself, should WWE have stopped him? And so what's your take on whether or not WWE should have even allowed him to compete tonight?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough debate. But I mean, look, in WWE's past, obviously, they've had and they've asked a lot of their wrestlers, you know, to perform hurt. And, you know, there's countless examples of that. In 2022, though, you know, being the billion-dollar company that they are, I have to imagine that doctors were involved here, and this wasn't necessarily just Vince McMahon and Cody in a room together going, hey, let's do this. I think WWE's got a lot. So they got a lot on the line, and if something were to have happened, I think to protect themselves, even if they don't care about Cody the human at all, like their business interests are at play. So I'm not a doctor, but my hunch is that it's one of those injuries where it's like, hey, he, you know, tore the pec muscle. You can't like tear it more than it already is. So hey, man, if you can deal with the pain, like, go ahead. You can't make this worse than it already is, and you got to go and have surgery, you know, on Monday or Tuesday. So that's my hunch that's where things went. So I kind of just lean on they probably consulted a doctor, and you know, if that doctor has any sort of credibility at all, like, then you know, Cody got the advice he needed, and there he goes. And I mean, I understand that history kind of tells us otherwise regarding Vince McMahon and WWE, but 2022 WWE is a lot different than 1995 WWE.
Yeah, I think that's kind of my impression too, is that it's a more of a pain tolerance thing where they couldn't make it worse,
right?
Kind of like you said. So long as Cody could tolerate the pain, then they were going to let him go. So that was my impression of it as it played out as well. But, you know, Zach, this was a show going in. The lineup didn't look great. I mean, how were you feeling about the show going in? What were your kind of expectations given the card? And as you walked out of the arena, how did you feel about the show that you just seen?
So I feel like I was higher than some on like just the card itself. And I guess it might just be because of just expectations, you know, like it being Hell in a Cell. You know, I think over the years it's like, okay, it's definitely like a B-level pay-per-view for sure, maybe even C in some cases. And so, you know, I kind of went into it with that in mind. And then when I looked up and down the card, it's like, okay, yeah, you don't have the men's world title on the line. You don't have Ronda Rousey defending her title. You don't have like a simmering hot, you know, feud for the Raw women's title either, given everything that went down with Sasha and Naomi. It was changed at the last minute. But if you can get past all that, like, I thought what they did to build the card was relatively effective. And I thought they presented, you know, the Hell in a Cell main event as a main event. And, you know, it was a rare instance that the Hell in a Cell stipulation on the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view made sense and was logical for where the feud was at that time. So I liked all of that. That being said, walking out of the building, the show certainly over-delivered in my opinion. Like, I thought it, you know, had elements where it could have been a really good show and good, you know, in-ring wrestling. But I think, you know, it even surpassed that with the opening triple threat and the Cody stuff, and even like a match like Austin, or not Austin Theory, but Theory versus Ali. Like, that was a really good match too, you know. And the six-man tag was really well done. And so it didn't have any, like, jarring drop-offs. There was drop-offs, but nothing like – there was no real, like, slow plodding along moment in the show. There were certainly, like, your peaks and valleys that you need in a pro wrestling show. But it didn't – there was never a time where I'm like, oh, my God, okay, can we be done with this? And not just me. Like, they had the audience, like, pretty locked and loaded from 7 o'clock until they wrapped at 10.
Was there a baby face on the show more over than the tables? Because the fans sure liked their tables, it sounded like.
Oh, my God. My own city just trolling me with the tables. So, yeah, I don't know. Cody, maybe the tables were very over tonight. I was disappointed in the main event. You know, Seth being the one to get the tables, and like, it just was like, oh, come on, Seth. Like, what did you think was going to happen there, man? You just spent 10 minutes getting all this heat and being this just dastardly heel, and focusing in on Cody's injured pec and arm, and now. Now the arena is chanting, thank you, Seth, because you pulled the table out. So I think that was a bad judgment on his part. But, yeah, man, boy, the tables, for sure. Star of the show.
Yeah. Tell me about the crowd. Crowd size, was it – it looked pretty sold out. Was that your impression, too, being there? And how were they throughout the show? Was it a lively crowd? You know, sometimes you could tell watching on TV, but WWE sweetens the crowd so much, even now with their live shows, sometimes it's hard to tell. So what was your impression of the attendance, and then just the how enthusiastic the crowd was during the show?
So I think it was sold out, for sure. I mean, it certainly felt that way and looked that way. Like, there was not – I couldn't see an empty seat in the house. I got there probably about – 45 minutes before the show started, and, you know, the lines were already super long for everything, merch, food, drinks, like, across the board. So it was a full house, for sure. And the crowd, you know, Chicago is usually a pretty hot crowd. And I've seen a lot of shows at the Allstate Arena, and this felt to me like one of the more subdued crowds out of the gate, like, before the show. Like, ordinarily you'd get some chants and whatever, and, like, just kind of this simmering buzz of excitement. But there was a point about 10 minutes before they went on the air where it was, like, very quiet in the building. And everybody was in their seat, so it wasn't like it was just, like, a scattering of people. But it was like, hey, there's 10 minutes to go, people are sitting. And it just felt a little more subdued. However, once the women's triple threat match got going and it kind of hit its stride and people recognized, like, wow, these women are really bringing it, and this is exciting stuff, that brought out kind of like the Chicago crowd that I'm used to. And then they were pretty hot from that moment on. So it was very much, you know, the work in the ring that you know, woke everybody up. And kept them hot throughout the night. So it was kind of an interesting crowd in that regard. They also, there were some children, but it was, you know, listening to on-site correspondents that call into our post shows, you get a lot of, oh yes, okay, lots of families at the show. And there was some of that, but it wasn't super notable where it's like, wow, okay, this is a family-friendly show. Like, this audience, I think, could have been plopped in an AEW show, and it would have, you know, it would have felt totally normal.
Are your schools out yet up there, or are you guys still going?
Ooh, I Well, boy, I'm not sure, but I think we're still going. I think this is the last week.
Okay. Because that, I mean, that could make a difference. You know, we finished up on Thursday. Thursday was the last day for students. So, you know, if you're, you know, taking kids to a show down here on a Sunday night and you got no school Monday, it's a lot easier to do that than if they have to go back to school Monday. So that could play a part as well. How many CM Punk fans?
There was a group of fans right behind me. Well, not right behind me, probably like 10, 15 rows behind me, that tried to get an AEW chant started. They tried to get the CM Punk chant started. They tried to get a tables chant started, and they were only successful on one of those three, and you can probably guess which one that was.
Uh-huh.
There was none of that going on. It seemed genuinely like the fans that were there were excited to see, you know, WWE wrestling, you know, for better or worse. Like, it seemed like they were there to see that and weren't there to, you know, protest or anything like that. They very much went along with it. I was trying my best to pay attention for piped in crowd noise. Like, and I was like extra hyped to crack this code. And I honestly, like, I really couldn't tell. So they're either like just supremely efficient at what they do to sweeten, or they weren't doing it tonight, because the cheers sounded pretty genuine. It was quiet at certain times. There was heat at certain times. There was weird cheering, like for Rollins. So I never got the sense that they were trying to enhance a reaction or drown one out. That was my perception of that. And again, I tried to be a little bit more heightened with it to see what we got, but nothing stood out as far as that went.
Yeah, interesting. I want to ask about the first match and some of the reactions there, because WWE has worked very hard to get Becky Lynch booed, and some crowds are more willing to go along with it than others. So in terms of the reactions, because, you know, Asuka is a babyface as well, how were the reactions at the opening match to Bianca Belair, Becky Lynch, and Asuka, and did they change as the match went on from the time that they were introduced? Because it sounded like Becky got mostly boos when she was introduced. So it sounds like, you know, WWE's work that they're putting in to make her a heel is finally starting to take hold. But, you know, compare the reactions that these women got when they were announced, when they first came out, to how it went through the match. Did it stay pretty consistent, or did, you know, fans start booing someone at first but then start cheering them as the match went on? How did that work?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because it was fun to watch, and it was noticeable, like the reaction. So I'll start with Bianca Belair, and she came across as a very big star for that company. Like, the universally cheered, and not just like, hey, everybody was loud for her, but like, you know, the kids that I saw cheering for her, men, women of all ages. I mean, like, she was over across the board, and looked the part too. You know, I mean, like, she looked like, hey, this is. You know, she had a little bit of a swagger behind her, I thought, that helped, you know, maintain that reaction, and it stayed for the match. Like, I think people were excited to, you know, to see her in there. She got to show off, you know, what she does, and so everything she did emphasized that positive reaction at the beginning. Asuka, same thing. She, not to the level of Bianca Belair, still got a good reaction. You know, just not as big, but people certainly were excited, and I think she really, I mean, she helped. You mentioned it in your opening, that the energy that she brought to the match was tangible. Like, you could tell, and she brought like a intensity to it as well, with like just her offense and the kicks and the strikes. Like, it just helped kind of putting the focus that, hey, this is a fight. So I would say that definitely a babyface reaction, but just a little less than Bianca Belair. And then Becky was really interesting. When she first walked out and her music hit, there was, you know, some definite boos there, heel reaction. And then it kind of turned as she did her entrance, like the poses in, on the ring pose or on the ring ropes. Like, you know, the audience was cheering her. She was also the first star out, period. There was no dark match at the beginning of the show. So some of that was going on too. So, like, I would call it mixed, but it was hard to say because she was the very first thing that the audience, or not thing, the very first person that the audience saw. With that said, during the match, you know, she worked heel all the way and pulled the heel reaction out of the crowd. Like, when she would try to, like, sneak in there, every time she tossed either Belair or Asuka out of the ring to try to sneak in a pin, they reacted. So she really, like, her work pulled the reaction out of the audience that she wanted. And then, funny story, too. So when Becky was out first, then Asuka, then Bianca. And when Bianca and Asuka were doing their entrances, Becky Lynch stood in her corner, stone-faced and still. No reaction to anything, not to either one of them, not to the audience. It was great, just great stuff. Like, someone just, like, in the mindset and it, like, playing a role to a T. You know, you don't get to see that on TV, and so it was fun to kind of see her continue to work when the camera wasn't on her. But
yeah,
a star for sure. But she, I think, you know, she's pulling this off now. And especially with Belair getting the reaction that she did tonight. Like, if this crowd is an indicator, you know, they as strange as it is to say, you know, they didn't make a horrible call here, because Belair's over, and then and Becky is starting to make this thing work. So a good night for those three women for sure.
The loss by Mustafa Ali, did that take any air out of the crowd heading into the Rhodes Rollins match? Because I know he was over. It was his hometown. U.S. title on the line here. There was a thought that he legitimately had an opportunity to win it here. So what did that do to the crowd heading into the main event?
Not much, honestly. Like, you know, for one thing, so the match was good, and they built to the 450 spot where, you know, you thought, hey, maybe he's going to actually pull this off. And from, you know, the psychology of the match, like, it all kind of came together at the right time. I think the audience, like, bought in at that moment, like, wow, Ali, is he going to actually win this thing? And there, you could feel that. And then when he didn't hit that, it was then kind of, okay, here, back to business as usual, fun's over, and then, you know, Theory won it. So I think, you know, the match was fun, and it had its moments, and both guys had nice chemistry together, I thought. And Theory looked good out there. I'm sure we'll talk about him in a little bit. But I think it was a kind of a confirmation of what everybody figured was going to happen. So I think the bigger surprise would have been him winning. And everybody was kind of primed for him to lose already, so the impact just didn't hit as much as you may have thought.
How about Moss and Corbin? How over was Moss as a babyface? Because, you know, I think he had a lot of momentum at the time of his turn, but I think the combination of keeping him in that outfit with that name, telling jokes on TV that were bad, and keeping him in a feud with Corbin, to be honest with you, who kind of sucks the heat out of everything that he does, hurt Moss's momentum that he had. So I was curious as to now that we're probably seeing the end of this feud, what the reaction to Moss was like by the live crowd tonight.
So, you know, so Moss, I mean, he looks like a million bucks. They finally got him in, you know, some ring attire that fits him and is a little more edgy and not suspenders. So, you know, it's it's a work in progress, and so was the reaction. Like, it was not, it was positive, but it was not overwhelming by any means, you know? I mean, so I kind of, you know, Kevin Owens got a bigger babyface reaction than Moss did, to put it in perspective a little bit. You know, he wasn't not over, or not, I don't want to say over, he wasn't ineffective out there, you know, but it still came across that he was very much finding his place, finding his stride, and building that relationship with the audience. And that it's just not there yet. And I think it could be there, you know, because there are people coming along, and there are moments that he, you know, got a bit of a pop. And so I think the pieces are there, but it's not there yet. And I think, you know, Corbin doesn't help matters too much. I mean, yeah, he can pull some heat out of the audience, but he's so irrelevant from a credibility standpoint that, like, that beating him doesn't do much. So, you know, he's going to have to keep trying to win fans over for sure. He's not there yet. He's in a better place than he was 4 weeks ago. But if this crowd is an indicator, you know, he's just not there yet.
Did Edge get a superstar reaction, even as a heel? I mean, did he seem to be acknowledged by the fans as this legacy star that WWE has built him up to be?
Man, you know, that's really interesting. No, not really. So they walked out, you know, I think it was Damian Priest walked out first, and then Rhea Ripley, and then, you know, Edge walked out after that. And there was certainly a bigger reaction for him when he walked out, but it was not like you were seeing this legacy Hall of Fame act. I mean, I think he very much blended in to the card and into the match too. So yeah, that's a really, I'm glad you asked that, because it was pretty stark, you know, when you think back to the Royal Rumble pop. Obviously, you know, that's not going to happen everywhere he goes. But even as recent as his stuff that he did in the babyface with Seth Rollins, like, crowd was pretty hot for him, pretty passionate for him. And you know, you didn't see that here. And it wasn't like, you know, oh, you know, he's being a heel either, and we don't like Edge. It was just kind of lukewarm. So, which was surprising, you know. So it was there. I mean, he's clearly, like, treated like a bigger star than the other two on his side. But, you know, Finn Balor and AJ Styles especially were reacted to in a more pronounced way than he was.
Ezekiel and Kevin Owens. You mentioned Kevin Owens getting a babyface pop, and I sort of, when I was going through the show at the top of the show, I said Ezekiel is more of a gimmick that works when he's not wrestling, you know, because we've seen Elias wrestle and it's, you know, it's okay. And we haven't seen really much from Ezekiel in terms of when he's wrestled on Raw, that he brings to the table that's really strong. So what was the crowd reaction to him tonight? And I mean, what do you see as the future once this whole deal with Kevin Owens is done?
Man, yeah. So, not a lot there for Ezekiel. And I going in, I wondered how the Chicago crowd was going to react. A while back, when Rusev was still in WWE, and God, I don't know what year it was. Maybe 2018 or something like that. You know, the Chicago crowd played along with, like, the Rusev Day chants and kind of that, like, you know, gimmicky type stuff that WWE was, you know, going against. They weren't pushing Rusev at that time, and so the audience, like, rained down a bunch of these Rusev Day chants when Rusev Day really wasn't anything. And I thought, like, okay, it's either going to go that way with Ezekiel, where you're going to have, like, this group of fans totally in on him, not in a serious way, but in almost like a just a joke comedy kind of way, or you're going to have what you had tonight, which was just people were interested, kind of, but, you know, they kind of were more interested in just watching whatever Kevin Owens was doing and engaging with him. And so it was fine, you know. I think it was the kind of the lower point of the show for sure in terms of crowd reaction standpoint in general. But really, it was Kevin Owens moving everything along, and Ezekiel was kind of, it felt like he was out there along for the ride, didn't get a ton of good offense in, and just was kind of a piece of the puzzle, but not at all the focus or the full picture. So and then Kevin Owens beat him clean as clean can be in the middle of the ring. So that seemed to kind of, I don't want to say squash him, but it's like, boy, you're kind of putting some cold water on that with that type of loss. People love Kevin Owens. The crowd really loved Kevin Owens. I mean, he got booed when he went out of his way to get booed, either yelling at some people in the crowd or you know, telling people to shut up or that kind of thing. But outside of that, he had a hard time getting a ton of heat. You know, the Stunner got a really big reaction. So it just was – it was kind of a backwards match, a bit of a mess. But, you know, it was what it was. Just wasn't great.
Yeah. How big is Omos in person?
He is massive in person. My goodness. He is massive, yes. He is, really big, you know. Like, I've seen Big Show, for example, you know, like 2000, big, like year 2000 Big Show. And he's not quite, I don't know if he came across as quite that big to me, but it's close. It's close. I mean, he's big. He certainly has a presence about him, but he really is obviously really limited in the ring. That said, what he did in the ring tonight was all there, you know. Like, he wasn't missing spots. He was, you know, hitting his spots, doing his thing. You know, Lashley and MVP carried a big part of that match. And I guess while I'm on it, I'll say that, you know, Bobby Lashley got probably the, I'd say, second biggest babyface reaction of the night, most likely.
Wow.
Him and Bianca Belair are right there. But then after that win, I mean, the crowd went nuts for him. Did they show on TV when he went into the crowd and grabbed someone's replica Universal Championship belt and brought it onto the ring apron and held it up? Did they show that?
You know, I can't remember. I read it. Did you tweet about that?
Yeah.
Okay, because I'm trying to think about where I saw it. Did I see it in a tweet or did I see it on TV? I'm not sure if they stayed with it long enough to show that.
Yeah, so, and I bring that up just because, like, he spent, right, outside of Cody Rhodes, who, you know, won the main event, Lashley spent the most time in the ring kind of celebrating with fans and interacting with them than anybody else on the show, you know, outside, like I said, outside of Cody. The crowd was into him, like, so much so where it screamed out to me, like, hey, if he's out for a long period of time, which obviously I think he's likely going to be, you know, you may have to strap a rocket onto Lashley's back. I mean, people were behind him in a major way, even with, you know, Omos and MVP as his opponents. That, and you kind of knew how the match was going to go, not necessarily from an outcome perspective, but just from a just in the ring wise, you knew it wasn't going to be too much, but what they did got over.
Yeah. All right, Zach, is there any other in-person notes that you want to let the listeners know about before we let you go for the evening?
Yeah. So, I just want to just double down on what I said before about it being like, I was surprised at how, you know, WWE friendly the crowd was. I mean, I've been in Chicago crowds before where they, you know, people in the audience, and there would be CM Punk chants. There'd be, like, you know, other...
They're one of the cities that are notorious for that.
Yeah, right, exactly. And so I was really surprised, especially on a B show like this, when with no men's world title match, you don't have Roman Reigns, you don't even have Riddle and Randy Orton and the Usos, like, you know, you don't have Ronda or Charlotte. Like, I just was kind of expecting that to happen, and they were tame in that regard. And so a lot of it, I think, had to do tonight with the in-ring work, because I think, you know, the card had its issues, no question about it. But once everything got in the ring tonight, I think it pretty much delivered across the board with some, you know, issues here and there. I don't know if that saved it, but it was very notable that that folks were just kind of there to see a WWE show. There was almost like, you know, an acceptance of this, and it was treated as such. And so it kind of made for a less like raucous experience, like that you're at this kind of like, you know, you're in this like crazy audience type thing, but it did make for a more enjoyable show watching, you know, just a wrestling show top to bottom, because you had, you know, reactions that were in line with the stories they were telling in the ring. So really, really interesting as far as that goes. And that's the only other thing I wanted to layer on. I mean, you asked all the good questions as usual, Greg. So I think that's it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Zach. I appreciate you reaching out and being willing to be our correspondent here tonight for Hell in a Cell in Chicago. So hope you have a safe return trip home, and I'm sure we'll talk to you right here on Wrestling Night in America sometime soon.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks very much for having me, Greg. Have a good show.
Thank you. Appreciate it. So some really interesting tidbits from Zach there, being there live and hearing from him. We do have a couple emails that I want to get to. Remember, you can email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. You can email us anytime, questions or comments about the big shows in pro wrestling. So obviously we'll be starting next week talking about Money in the Bank coming up, talking about Impact Wrestling Slammiversary, talking about the Forbidden Door pay-per-view that's happening. So the summertime used to be when there was a bit of a lull, but that is not the case anymore. So this email comes from Doug. He says, "Hi, Greg. This is a really good PLE. That Cody versus Seth match was great, but painful to watch. If WWE had a deeper bench, I don't think this match would have taken place." And yeah, that's interesting. I mean, this is a show that, and Zach mentioned it, you know, the depth of WWE's roster sort of exposed here, because you had some matches that I think people going in would say are not really pay-per-view worthy matches, or are matches we've seen over and over again. You know, KO versus Ezekiel feels like a Raw match. Moss versus Corbin we've seen over and over again, and they're two mid-carders. You know, so it's one thing to see main event level guys wrestling in high stakes matches month after month, but when it's mid-carders, or, you know, Lashley and Omos or something like that, it can be a little repetitive. And so to come out as positive as the reaction seems to be, not just from Doug in that email, but from Zach, who was there live, and from some of the other reactions I've seen on social media, to come out of this largely as a thumbs-up show, I think most people would agree, is a compliment to the wrestlers on the card. And you've got to give credit to WWE for the storylines leading up to it. There wasn't a lot to them, but it was enough to keep people interested in the matches and everything like that. So a thumbs up from Doug, and I think a lot of other people here who watched this show tonight. So we've got a couple people on hold that we'll get to here. Don't forget, 515-605-9345 is the number to call. First up is the 478 area code, 478. Go ahead, you're on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
How you doing tonight, Greg? Long time no hear from.
Hey, how's it going?
All right, now I'm back, man. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good to hear from you.
Big weekend.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
It is a big weekend. what did you think of Hell in a Cell tonight?
Pretty good show. Main event. Made it. good story that they told with Cody. My question to you would be for I'm gonna go back to NXT with the with the finish of the women's matches. Who do you see taking those women out, Toxic Attraction?
You know, they're introducing so many women that it's hard to say. You know, you look at the you look at the tournament that they've got going on, and they're introducing all these kinds of women, all the new ones. You know, Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez are the two that jump out to me right away. And they seem to have this natural on-screen chemistry. They seem to be good together. The only problem is it does feel like one of them is going to unseat Mandy Rose. So NXT seems to have a couple options. Do they team them up and have them beat Toxic Attraction and get a run with the tag titles, or do they choose one of them to take on Mandy Rose and eventually beat her for the title? So those are the two, more than anything else. Maybe Nikita Lyons. I'm really high on Nikita Lyons. I know she just got hurt or was out of the tournament. Not sure how long she's going to be out for, but she's someone who I think is a little under the radar in terms of the women on the NXT roster as someone who could really end up being a big star there. And, if, you know, if you're talking about maybe 6 months down the line, if Mandy keeps holding that title for quite a while, I think Nikita Lyons could be a name that, that unseats Mandy Rose.
Okay, okay, okay. And now, with the pay-per-view tonight and Hell in a Cell, where do you see Cody going? Should they let him rest for a few weeks because of that shoulder and stuff like that?
Yeah, I would assume he's getting surgery on that. I don't know for sure, and I'm not sure what the timetable is because we've got a couple different comments from the announcers, you know, a pectoral strain or a tear or a tendon or a muscle. WWE was a little sloppy with the wording from the announcers tonight. So I'm not really sure which one it is because they carry very different timetables depending on what type of injury it was. So it sounds like he's going to be out for a little while at minimum, and at most it could be quite a while. So absolutely, you know, the victory here by Cody was interesting because I talked about earlier about, you know, with Cody presumably being on the shelf for a little while, it would have made sense to give Seth Rollins the win and to sort of let him go from there. But with Cody getting the victory, you almost think WWE is erring on the side of he may not be out for very long, and we want to keep that momentum and give him that W. So it really all depends on how long he's out for, and we got sort of mixed messages from WWE on that here tonight. I would expect an update probably tomorrow night at Raw, but man, like I know this wasn't part of the question, Darrell, but that you just got to give it to Cody Rhodes for gutting it out. Whether or not it was the right call, whether or not it was a good decision, you know, that's a separate debate. But once the decision was made to send him out there from WWE's point of view and from Cody's point of view, the fact that he was able to have the match that he had tonight, just unbelievable.
True. How the pay-per-view took out took a life of its own tonight with not having none of the, you could say, some of the people that they've been leaning on heavy with, like the Usos and Roman and stuff like that. And you got a couple of pay-per-views coming up back-to-back. You got Money in the Bank, July 4th weekend, which I'll be there. And you got the one in Nashville, SummerSlam, which I'll be at that one as well. What do you see as the main events of those two shows?
Oh boy, you know, I think SummerSlam, I look at Drew McIntyre, Roman Reigns. I think SummerSlam is one of WWE's key events of the year, and to be honest, Money in the Bank has become one of those key events, even though it couldn't sell out the Allegiant Stadium where they wanted it. They ended up having to move Money in the Bank. So, you know, I think Reigns versus McIntyre feels like a SummerSlam-worthy main event, and you've got the Big Show in Wales, I believe it is, in I think September. So that's going to be a stadium show. They're going to need a big main event for that one. I think Drew McIntyre is probably going to play a prominent role there. So he may even beat Roman Reigns at SummerSlam for one of the titles. And maybe they do title versus title in Europe in September. So that could be something that they look towards. So it feels like it's easier to predict a main event for SummerSlam than Money in the Bank, even though Money in the Bank is the next major show coming up. But you know, it all depends on Roman Reigns. You know, is that a show that he's going to be at, or is it not? Because if it is, you need a challenger. So, you know, do you go with a guy like Bobby Lashley, who gets the victory and hopefully moves on from Omos soon? Do you go with a guy like Shinsuke Nakamura, who they've teased as a potential opponent for Roman Reigns? Do you go with a guy like Riddle, who, with Randy Orton out in storyline getting some time off, Riddle challenging Roman Reigns could be an interesting dynamic. So there are not a shortage of potential opponents for Roman Reigns at Money in the Bank if he wrestles and if he is on the card. If he's not, then I think maybe you do a women's match. You do Bianca Belair versus Becky Lynch. We're one step closer to that rematch after tonight where Asuka takes the fall here. And the stars seem to be aligning for another Belair versus Lynch match sooner rather than later. So if no Reigns, I think you could see that. You know, you got Ronda Rousey too, and presumably a rematch with Charlotte Flair. I think if there's no Reigns, that could be a main event at Money in the Bank just as sure as Belair versus Lynch. So a lot of options out there for Money in the Bank, depending on, of course, whether or not Roman Reigns takes part in the event.
Yeah, I like those too. And as well, it seems like Roman might want to take a break or something, just looking at how everything playing itself out. I wonder, would you split those titles and let Cody maybe win Money in the Bank, cash in Money in the Bank at SummerSlam, then let him win one of those titles, and then let Drew win at Cardiff with a big cheer from the crowd behind him. And now you got two big baby faces going on at that time.
Yeah, again, I think a lot of it is going to depend on the severity of the injury. Obviously very severe given what it looked like tonight, but how long is it going to keep him out? Because there's no guarantee that Cody's going to be there at Money in the Bank. And I see Cody as more of a long-term opponent for Roman Reigns. I don't see them rushing to get into that match, especially with, you know, maybe Cody versus Roman Reigns at SummerSlam, and then something they do with Drew McIntyre in September. So it really all depends on Cody's injury. If he's going to be out a while, you know, we could be talking about Cody Roman at the end of the year.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's true. Just thank you. Hopefully you will get into it more faster and quicker. Quicker than that, just because you want to, just to see who you can get in there at the time. But I would like to see that. So, but that's all my questions for tonight. And thanks for being able to speak to you again, Greg. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a while. Good to hear from you, Darrell. Thanks for calling in tonight.
Yes, sir.
So Darrell from Georgia, one-time frequent caller here of Wrestling Night in America. Good to hear from him again. We got one more email and one more caller, two more callers, rather. One just jumped on. So let's go to our email here. This is from Charles from Herndon, Virginia. He says, okay, so in kayfabe, Rollins went toe-to-toe with a supernatural being and won in Hell in a Cell 3 years ago, but got beat by a mere mortal with a torn pec 3 years later. But on the real, based on how Cody's right side looked, no way he should have been cleared to wrestle that match. That was uncomfortable for me to watch. I pray he didn't do more damage to himself in this match, but overall, a good main event. And I think Zach Haydorn, when he was on, hit the nail on the head. And I've seen this floated on social media as well, that doctors could have looked at Cody's injury and said, look, this is what it is. It can't get worse in this match. And if Cody decides, you know, we're going to have surgery to repair it right after, they could say, look, it's a pain tolerance issue. If it is too painful for you, then do not go out there. But if you can manage the pain, if you can tolerate the pain, then it's not going to get worse. So go ahead and do it. So I think that's the issue. It was really, I mean, my face, the whole match was kind of scrunched up like, oh my gosh, is he really doing this? And so, you know, WWE historically has given us lots of reasons not to trust their decision-making when it comes to injuries and things of that nature. But I think they get the benefit of the doubt here with this. I think a lot of people see it for what it is and see Cody out there and understand that this is probably a situation where, you know, the injury has already happened. It's not necessarily going to get any worse. It's not like a concussion where you're sending somebody out there or anything like that, where more long-term irreparable damage could take place. So at least, you know, hopefully it was the case where it couldn't do more damage, especially with the amount of times Cody worked on it. So I'm sorry, Seth worked on the injury. So that's kind of my take on it. Back to the phones, the 305 area code 305. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
DJ from Miami.
Oh, DJ. Calling from a slightly different number, it looks like. So good to hear from you tonight. What did you think of Hell in a Cell?
It was a C show, I guess. It was nothing too crazy, you know. You know, the belts really take, you know, a lot out of it, you know.
You mean the lack of world title?
Yeah,
that, you know, that's something I brought up at the top of the show, and I think it's part of the reason the card looked as weak as it did going in. When you don't have Roman Reigns, you don't have any title, not just the Universal, but the WWE title. They're both on Roman Reigns, and when he's not on the show, that means neither major title will be defended. So not only that, but you didn't have the SmackDown women's title. You only had one major title, that being the Raw women's title. So WWE kind of went into this show behind the eight ball already, just with the way the card looked. But I think for the most part, the matches were on the higher end of what you could expect.
Yeah, it was like a Raw plus, you know. I didn't feel like it was a...
Very much so.
It was you know what I mean? It didn't feel like it to me, you know.
Yeah, I understand that. I totally get that.
I guess going into it, I guess, you know, Bobby Lashley did say, like, he want to be the next heavyweight champion again, and they were saying that on the TV. So going into that, now that Cody is hurt, he is the next babyface. Like, they really need to put a rocket and shoot him up because he was such a good heel, but, you know, and then this Omos thing has got this needs to end. He's the only one left. Like, who else do you really think is out there to be a good babyface now that Cody's gone? Like, come on.
I agree. I think Lashley would be at the top of my list in terms of who would face Roman Reigns next. I just listed some of the possibilities with Nakamura and stuff like that. Obviously, Nakamura not coming at this from as strong a position as Lashley would be. Riddle is another guy. I don't know how long Orton's going to be off TV for, but, you know, you could milk it a little and get a pay-per-view title match out of Riddle versus Roman Reigns. But I do think that Lashley is a guy who a lot of people are going to buy in that position. And Zach talked about just how strong the crowd reactions for Lashley was tonight in Chicago. So, hopefully WWE sees that. They realize that. It doesn't feel like his feud with Omos is done yet. It feels like they still have one more singles match to go, perhaps with some sort of stipulation. So even though Cody is presumably going to be on the shelf for a little while, it doesn't feel like they're going to go right to Lashley versus Reigns, at least until they're done with Lashley and Omos.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. But I'm done with that already, you know, it's just over.
Yeah,
you know
me too.
Mean?
Trust me, me too.
So I just hope they do something with Lashley. I just do. So I guess my next thing is, you know, everybody's getting hurt. So the CM Punk thing, I feel like going into CM Punk thing, you know, everybody's getting hurt. That, do you feel like at the end of the day, do you feel like they should have did something with the MJF and they should have did like the 2 out of 3? And do you think that at the end of the day, you think that maybe, you know, that Hangman should have won the first one and maybe CM Punk would have got hurt and we wouldn't have had this? Or do you really think that CM Punk is going to relinquish it? This title thing, or do you think MJF should come in and swoop it in and then maybe Hangman can be going back to a babyface? I don't know. I mean, where do you really see this at the end of the day? Because this is crazy. Everybody's getting hurt.
Yeah, the Punk thing, I think hindsight is 20/20. You don't put the belt on Punk, but the fact that he got injured after the match with Hangman Page at Double or Nothing is, you know, you can't go back and say, oh, you know, they should have kept the belt on Page because Punk got injured. I mean, that you never would have been able to predict that. As far as what happens, I don't think they seemingly made the decision that Punk isn't going to relinquish the title, and that's fine. I mean, that I don't have a huge problem with that. He just won the title. I'm sure they have great creative plans for when he comes back. But the MJF part that you brought up, DJ, is interesting because I think a lot of people, with the way his promo went on Dynamite this past Wednesday, are going to be looking for ways for him to return and kind of try to stick it to AEW and Tony Khan. And what better way could he do that than entering the Battle Royal, winning the Battle Royal, beating Jon Moxley on Dynamite to go on to Forbidden Door? MJF has at least publicly stated he really doesn't have any interest in fighting anyone from New Japan, so I think that build would be very interesting if that were the case and if they were to include that into the storyline leading up to the Forbidden Door pay-per-view. But I don't know. I don't really know where they're going with this MJF stuff. I wasn't really a big fan of the work shoot promo on Wednesday. I know a lot of people loved it. I thought MJF's delivery was great, but I didn't think it was a good idea to basically no-sell Wardlow's win and transition MJF into this completely new thing and, you know, playing on the backstage politics of it all. You know, we've been there, done that, and I don't think this was any more effective than a lot of the previous incarnations of these that we've seen. But, yeah, the Punk thing and the injury is just unfortunate timing. I mean, I don't know that you can call it any more than that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we'll see what happens. Hopefully they don't do something weird or crazy. So my last thing is I don't know. Like, I feel like now that Jeff Jarrett is there, and do you feel like things are going to change? Do you feel like?
Well, Jarrett's position is only in charge of live events.
It was a live event. I mean, look how bad it was.
Well, I
know?
Mean, I don't think it's going to be booking the show. It's just sort of, I'm not even sure what the position entails, but it's not a booking position. It's just
Stone Cold's tonight, so maybe we can, you can find out what.
I mean,
I thought he was supposed to help book the shows because it was live shows. That's what I thought.
No, I think they're more like house shows
to try
to come up with ideas and ways to get people to attend the house shows. I don't think it has anything to do with actual, like, booking the cards or the results or anything like that.
I had to ask because I really didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what it is, but I think that it's more like in charge of running the live events at the arenas, and like more like the house shows.
Okay. I had to ask. That was it. Nothing too crazy this time. But hopefully next week will be better. You know, we'll find out tomorrow.
I await your crazy questions next week, DJ, as always. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks.
All right, we've got one last call here to get to here on hold 586. You are on Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name, where you're calling from.
Hey, Greg, it's Robert. I'm from Detroit, but I was on site in Chicago tonight.
Oh, excellent. Our second live correspondent. Good to always hear from people who were at the show live. So I'll ask you, first, what your impressions of the show were, thumbs up and thumbs down, and what did you think of the crowd and how good it was here on this night?
Thumbs up, going in, everybody has, smack talk about the lack, you know, the depth on the card, but in my opinion, they always pull it off. It's a weird thing to say I trust the WWE these days, but when it comes to pay-per-views, I usually do. They usually pull it off no matter what they got on paper, so thumbs up for me.
So where were you in the arena? How were your seats?
I don't know if you noticed, I'm the guy in the purple and silver Macho Man outfit. I'm the, people usually call me Detroit Macho Man. I was on camera side in the sixth row, so.
Okay.
All my friends and family were telling me that I was pretty constantly visible, so I was in that section.
Okay, good to know. So I guess if anyone's listening to this maybe on Monday and they haven't caught the pay-per-view yet, to go back and catch Robert on the show. So going through things here, and I'll ask you some of the similar questions I asked Zach when he was on earlier, but the opening match seemed to get the crowd off on the right foot. And so the opening match is so important because it can set the tone for at least the first hour, if not the rest of the show. But the first match seemed to put the crowd in a good place going forward. Did you get that sense as well, being there live?
Without a doubt. Actually, a friend of mine texted me when the match was over and said that match delivered. And so obviously it came through on TV and in person. So it pulled it off.
From where you were sitting, what was the reaction like to the different women in the match? Did Becky get a lot of cheers, or was it mostly heel heat? Was Bianca the most popular? How was it split amongst the three women?
You know, I think everybody equally, I mean, maybe more so Bianca for her entrance, but throughout the match, I mean, it seemed like everybody was rooting for all three of them. And I think sometimes that when people, like, they were booing Becky, but sometimes I think they do it because it's fun. I don't think they actually hate her. It's just how it feels in the crowd.
And playing along with the storyline, I think there's some people who enjoy doing that. Like, they may like Becky Lynch, and they may think she's a cool person, and they may think she's a really good wrestler, but they understand that she's a heel, and her job is to get heel heat, and they want to help her do her job well. And I think there's some of that to it as well.
Right, exactly. Kind of like me. That's kind of the role I play when I'm there.
Well, you're doing it right then. So the main event, and, I mean, you being so close to the ring, we're probably able to see Cody's injury more quickly than some other people who were there in the crowd. I know when Zach tweeted out, he wasn't sure if it was a bruise or if there was tape over Cody's chest. So, I mean, what was the reaction from people in your section when you saw the injury that Cody was wrestling with tonight?
Well, honestly, they had Cody on the big on the Tron when he pulled the jacket off, so it was instantly visible to everyone on the Tron when he was taking the jacket off. And, I mean, everybody kind of let out these oohs and gasps, you know, because obviously it looked pretty rough.
And what was the crowd reaction in that match like? Was there a sense that people were kind of holding their breath and hoping Cody didn't get hurt? Or, you know, other than cheering for the tables during the match, I mean, what was the reaction like?
I didn't get the sense that anybody was holding back. I mean, I definitely know what you're saying about where you kind of got this in the back of your mind the whole match. Like, is he going to be okay? But I didn't get the feeling, at least for me or people around me, that it was a hindrance on the match at all. I don't know how it came across on TV, but live, people were into everything. I mean, people around me, at least, were into everything that was happening, and I don't think that they were, like you said, waiting with bated breath to see if Cody was going to get worse injured or not.
Okay. I'm not sure if you were able to kind of look around to see this or to notice this, but in terms of merchandise that people were wearing, was there any wrestler that was significantly more popular in terms of merchandise than anyone else from what people were wearing in the audience?
You know, a couple months ago, Wade asked me the same question, and I think it's still the same. I think I've seen a lot of RK-Bro, and I feel like the Bloodline obviously is always popular. And a thought that I had while I was there, I did notice a lot of people wearing older T-shirts. Like, it just seemed to be prominent around me. Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that you will be going to wrestling shows 20 years from now, and you will still see at least one person wearing an NWO T-shirt. Like, I cannot go to a wrestling event anywhere and not see at least one person wearing an NWO shirt, even, you know, more than 20 years later.
Oh, without a doubt. It's funny you say that. Like, I have friends and family that have deemed that, like, my uniform, my personal life uniform is a shirt with NWO on it somewhere. I mean, it's true. I've always got a T-shirt with NWO or Hollywood Hogan on it. That just seems to be what, I don't know, what I'm always in somewhere.
Your fallback option, if anything else, I guess, right?
Right. I mean, I probably got 600 WWE shirts, and I wear the same five probably in rotation.
Mustafa Ali, crowd favorite, hometown guy, and he loses. I sort of asked Zach the same question, but did you get the sense that loss by Ali, given his hometown roots there, took the air out of the crowd before the main event at all?
No, I didn't expect him to win. I mean, at the end there, I wouldn't have been shocked if they pulled it out, but I didn't expect him to win, and therefore I don't know that anybody really did. But even, like, again, texting with a buddy of mine shortly after the show, he said, you know, us in the crowd gave Ali a top three pop of the night. And I don't think that the result hurt the match or the rest of the night, at least not for me. But I didn't expect him to win. But his reaction was probably stronger than you would expect, given, I mean, he might not have the same reaction in the past. I don't know what's different now.
One of the talking points coming out of the last major show was just how much downtime for the live viewer there was with commercials on Peacock, with video packages that you know, previewed matches that were coming up. How did WWE deal with those stoppages and with that downtime in the arena for fans?
They turned the lights off and ignored us.
Oh, wow, okay.
I mean, that's it. I mean, it crossed my mind, too. I've been to plenty of shows where, I mean, there's a serious amount of downtime showing us videos that we might just be watching at home, you know, just the same. Occasionally at live events, they'll have, you know, some of the superstars do stuff during commercial breaks, what have you. I think there might be in there a little bit more of a time crunch. Well, I don't know. I guess it's not. It's the same thing, but just keeping the flow of the show going on their own without commercial breaks, it still felt like they were taking a lot of downtime with the video packages and stuff.
Did that hurt or help the crowd reactions, do you think? Giving fans that time to kind of breathe or, you know, go to the bathroom or do whatever and then get hyped back up for the next match? Or did it sort of hurt the flow or momentum of the crowd?
I really don't think it hurt. I didn't get that sense at all. It just, like you said, it kind of gave people time for a breather.
Yeah. Okay.
I go on for an hour if you want to talk about stuff, but... you asked about the crowd. The building was full. However, it did cross my mind and some people around me that it felt like the stage, the set, the Tron was a little bit closer to us than it, in the past. And it did feel like that. Like maybe they, instead of using, like, you know, 90% of the arena, they were using 85.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, so I guess without going on for an extra hour, is there any other important things that you noticed that you think would be interesting or worth noting to the listeners here?
Other than my own personal experience, like thoughts about stuff, right? I'm not sure that things that happened off camera. I didn't hear the first on-site caller. Did they show the stuff with Lashley flexing with somebody's title on TV?
You know, he asked me the same question, and I was probably, after the match, I was probably getting up to get pizza. So I don't know that I saw that. I don't remember.
I saw some red lights on the cameras that looked like they were on. So it
might have been shown. I know Corey Graves had talked about how, you know, Lashley was wanting to go after the title at some point. So they were certainly hinting, or perhaps more than hinting, that we've not seen the last of Lashley and Roman Reigns.
Well, we did once, and Lashley beat him, but that was, you know, in their world 100 years ago, and doesn't matter anymore.
Of course. Of course.
But, yeah, I don't know how much of it came across on TV, but they made a point for Lashley to flex with a fan's, like, replica title from ringside, and he was doing the motion to his waist like he wanted a title, and they got back up on the apron, and it seemed to me like I was looking around on purpose to see if the cameras were still on, and I saw some red lights on the cameras, so they must have been on them for TV. So,
yeah, interesting. So, yeah, the Lashley Reigns saga could be continuing here sooner rather than later.
They gotta get somebody here because they're super low on faces right now.
Yeah,
super
for
duper
sure.
low
and. Yeah, that's what we talked about earlier, and we've talked about that on this show for weeks now. You know, the big question coming out of almost every pay-per-view is who's Roman Reigns going to face? Who's Roman Reigns going to face next? There's no baby faces. So certainly if WWE plays their cards right, Bobby Lashley could be that guy. So
I think he's their only option right now with Cody being out, so.
Yeah, I think so. There are some others that are a little bit weaker than Lashley. I think he's the strongest option, like you said. Thank you so much for calling in. Appreciate your live perspective, and thanks for adding to the show here tonight.
Hey, thank you.
Absolutely. And we've got one more caller we'll go to, the 410 area code, 410. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
You know who this is. This is
Reverend Keith from Baltimore, Maryland. It was so late. I wasn't sure if this was you. I recognized the area code, but I wasn't sure if it was you or someone else from Baltimore. So good to hear from you tonight. Thanks for joining us and interested to hear your thoughts on Hell in a Cell.
I thought Hell in a Cell was a B-plus pay-per-view or premium live event. The only reason why I pressed one was because I didn't want there to be any doubt whatsoever in reference to what Zach and Robert questioned as far as what was aired on Peacock. Both
okay.
Becky Lynch looking stone faced with the Disney villain look during the entrances of both Asuka and Bianca Belair was seen on Peacock. And I even was on Twitter about that, and I was saying how she had a game face on. That was shown prior to the women's triple threat match, which was a phenomenal opener. It was a phenomenal opener. And the biggest concern of the night was everything that occurred between Bobby Lashley and the fan who handed him the replica WWE title belt was aired. I repeat, was aired on Peacock. He actually went over to the fan, which I'm almost certain he knew him, and he picked the guy handed him the belt. He posed around the ring with the belt. He went up on the apron and held the belt up high, and he said to the fan, he said, "I haven't forgotten. I want this again." And then he actually stepped down. Before he handed the fan back the title, the replica title belt, he kissed the belt and handed it to him. So that is a sign of things to come, Lashley versus Roman sometime this summer. So the only reason why I called in this late was to let you guys know that both what Zach was concerned about and Robert, who, by the way, has been seen on AEW television wearing that Macho Man, ooh, yeah, outfit. So hats off to Robert for calling in.
Well, I'm glad you called in to clarify, and I've learned my lesson about leaving the television area to go get more dinner while they're still showing things. So I've learned my lesson. I'm going to wait till the video packages next time, and if they're still on screen, I'm going to stay there because I don't want to be caught flat-footed on a question like that again.
Yes, sir. Well, Greg, you've done an excellent job. It was also good to hear Darrell tonight. I hadn't heard him in months, and it's late. I'm going to let you go. We'll talk again next week because I want to chime in on this MJF shoot work on next Sunday. So you have a great week.
Okay.
God bless you. Keep up the good work. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Reverend Keith, and thanks for clarifying what we saw on TV tonight. And that's a good way to end it, I think, tonight. Thanks, everybody, for calling in. And as Reverend Keith said, you can catch us next week. Same place, pwtorchdailycast.com. If you want to call in, same number. Email us, wnialivecast@gmail.com. We'll talk MJF's pipe bomb. We'll talk Punk and the interim championship that's going to be taking place this Wednesday. And we'll talk Money in the Bank and Slammiversary and Forbidden Door and all the big shows we've got coming up. Because that's what we do here on Wrestling Night in America. We talk about the big shows in pro wrestling. I'm Greg Parks, PW Torch columnist. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And folks, thanks again for joining us here tonight, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.